Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Holla Citron, and we are so, so, so grateful that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So I want to give you a little bit of a background of where this podcast was born. It's born from the mission of my company, I Am Creative, which is to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and to empower people, especially adults, to own their talents that come in so many different forms. And I promise you that when you take action and incorporate your voice into your daily life, you will find more self-expression, connection, and ultimately joy. So in this space, I get to talk to so many inspiring people that have jobs, interests, and hobbies that have varied from real estate brokers, mindset coaches, lawyer, doctor, physics teacher, and so many more. And the conversation revolves around the same three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? And then we have a free-flowing conversation, and then we see where it goes. So my inspiring guest for today is Laura Brody. Laura sculpts for the human body and its vehicles. She developed and curates a series of exhibits that reimagine disability as opulent and powerful. I love this. Ms. Brody works as a professional costume maker and designer, an artist, and a teacher. She is passionate about reuse, sustainability, and reimagining disability. Welcome to the space, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
You're welcome. I am so glad that you are here.
Oh, this is really cool.
So how about you, before we jump into the first question, if you could just give us a little bit of a background and expand a little bit more on what you do. I just love, love, love the concept of what you do, of this expansion on this word disability. But tell us about what you do.
Okay. Well, first off, I don't identify as disabled, but I've spent a fair amount of time around disability. But what really, really got me into the idea of looking at disability differently is when I started to look at the objects differently, meaning the vehicles, like the wheelchairs, the walkers, all of the rest of it. Old partner of mine had a stroke. I got a lot more intimately acquainted with assistive devices and assistive technology and was really fascinated, but as an artist was kind of horrified at the clinical and cold design and thought, okay, well, I might be able to come up with something different, and started doing some of the artwork, my own artwork of that, and realized how little I understand about medical device technology. But that was okay. I made some really dumb mistakes, which is fine. But I started getting really excited about and also really stubborn about it because I was trying to find places to share my work and I couldn't find places that were wheelchair accessible, which is kind of a jerk move if you're designing wheelchairs. You know, like, I can't share this with my friends. That's not cool. And I thought, okay, it can't just be me. I know that I'm not really well suited to going into medical device design, but we've got to be willing to talk about this and try to invite other artists in. So the first time I did that, I did a really tiny, tiny show and had to like bug the people who were the gallery owners for a year before it started. But eventually people's warmed up to the idea, and I've been doing this ever since. So started out in 2013, and now it's international. We've got artists from all over the world.
Oh my God, it's beautiful. So when you say that you design assistive technology, like, what does that mean exactly?
Well, first off, I am redesigning it, very definitely. I'm not creating a new design for a wheelchair, meaning that, like, the bare bones of it. I'm using old pieces, right? But I am re-sculpting around them. So one of them, the first piece was a wheelchair that I turned kind of into an Edwardian steampunk throne. There's a walker with an attached parasol and cow horns and a GPS unit and a gramophone horn and cushions. because, you know, you need to be comfy. There's a mobility scooter that's done like an Art Nouveau peacock. And I've been moving more into developing them as literally as characters, the Collie Walker, there's Medusa. But with all of that, I wanted to invite other artists to come in and share their ideas about disability and specified it didn't have to be about the vehicles, right? So let's come and see what else you've got in mind. So it's amazing that people have been showing up and they do work evolving sight, involving hearing, involving mental health issues and all kinds of invisible disabilities, dwarfism, a whole range of topics. And if I'd gotten too specific and said, oh, you can only touch on this, I wouldn't got nearly the most exciting stuff that I've had. There was an interactive migraine one, which is brilliant.
God, it's just this idea, because they're functional, correct? Like people are actually using them?
Yeah, these are functional. Not all of the pieces that come in are functional, mind you, but all of them are incredibly good ways of changing the way we look at disability, because I think people tend to go from the outside of it from more of a more medical model, like seeing as a problem to be fixed. And I'm coming at it from a much more social model. So this is a lifestyle, and it's a lifestyle for a lot of people. And why not make that lifestyle awesome?
Yeah.
And it seems like such a natural thing, because to me, it's not, doing it for them. It's doing it for us, because if we're lucky enough to live long enough and make it through things like, you know, accidents and ailments and whatever else, we're going to be lucky to have that. We're fortunate to get disability, you know?
I mean, what's beautiful about it is you're creating this space for people to see, to feel empowered of not having to feel small. And because that word disability has such a negative connotation. So here it's there's a type of glamour to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm also working with people who really are taking back the term disability, not as a form of being smaller or being looked as negative, but saying, look, no, we're embracing disability because this is part of who we are. This is part of what we have and what we experience. And we want you to see it, but we want you to look at it. So often I think people overlook or want to shield themselves from it. Yeah. You know, they don't want to look too closely. Either they're afraid of embarrassing people or they're afraid to look at it, period. But they don't want to look at it too close. And these demand to be looked at, you know? They stand right up and make you pay attention.
Like a Medusa's throne. Like, that's kind of like in your face.
Oh, yeah. She's not hiding. And it's kind of an awesome thing. I think it's also invited people's creativity in a very real way, you know. So I'll try to give people a lot of heads up room before a show to say, here, we're putting this out, and here you've got this many months before you have to do the deadline. You want to try something? Maybe you hadn't thought of something new. And I've had some really interesting work sent in that way.
So what's great is you really, I mean, what you said was you faced some difficult times, some people not too keen on the idea in the beginning, but you kept with it. And now you have it international. Like, that's amazing.
It's pretty cool. I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of, it's smaller. Please don't get me wrong. But I'm getting some really fascinating, wonderful people from all over the world. I started looking internationally because I wanted more artists, you know. And wow, the more you look, the more there's there.
Yeah.
Well, it's I think being willing to look, right?
Yeah, just like all of what you're saying, being willing to look. Like you really, it's a specific niche that you're looking for. It's not going to apply to everybody. It's pretty specific.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually part of the point. I mean, to some degree, yeah, it will apply to everyone to some extent, even temporarily, but to really want to spend the time with it, it's a pretty specific niche.
So maybe give us a little bit more of, so you have a background on you. So I know we're going to dive into this with the questions, but you,
okay.
So this is one aspect of what you do. And then you also are a costume maker and designer and a teacher as well.
Correct. So I actually, the skills that I learned, because I do a lot of specialty costumes and crafts, and I do that professionally. Right now for TV, it's been for all over the place. Opera, dance, theater, movies, you name it. Things that have costumes. But a lot of it was, there's a lot of creative problem solving, right? And then trying to figure things out. And those gave me the skills to create my first art pieces. You know, without that, I wouldn't have been able to.
So
the teaching came out of it partially because I've taught for a long, long time. But to really be teaching people how to sew and pattern and alter things, it's just from a real passion of, first, that I love this, and I'm seeing that this is not a skill that's being taught as much. We had like 20, 25 years of people not doing this. You know, it just kind of being phased out of importance. And there's something so profound and powerful about having the using your own hands to create something, or using yourself to create something instead of just giving the work away to somebody else, that it seemed like an essential thing to share with people.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember when you said that, I mean, going back 20, 30 years, I guess, in high school, home ec class. And I made a skirt and I made a pillow, an elephant pillow.
Yep. I mean, and that's for a lot of people, that's all that they got, right? Because it kind of got phased out. Lots of different reasons. But I'm seeing more and more people craving learning how to make things themselves. And I'm a huge believer in that.
Yeah.
But it's also, it kind of applies in the disability objects too, because some of it is being really inspired by the designs people were coming up with on their own. But also, why not make something that you live in every day amazing?
Exactly. It's like your clothing. I mean,
it's your vehicle. It's and you should have a fancy dress one, and you should, if you can. And the stuff that I make, not everybody's going to want an Art Nouveau Peacock scooter, but although I can't imagine why you wouldn't, but that's just me. different people have different musical tastes. So maybe the somebody who likes Hello Kitty is not going to be into Norwegian death metal. But maybe they should all have their own special chairs, right?
Exactly. It's why they have vanilla and chocolate, and why there's this guy, I can't remember his name. My son recently showed him to me. He's this big guy that wrote all these books talking about money. And anyway, he walks around with these question mark suits. And
he's being the Riddler?
He has them in all different colors. And he's talking about money and education. And he could have, he lives in Washington and he could have been in government, but he didn't want to go that route. He wanted to be there for the people to ask questions. And he has these suits that are in all different colors with all different kinds of size question marks on it. And people smile when they see him. I mean, he stands out. So he's not one to blend in. And he has glasses that are really colorful and, he's made to stand out and be a piece of art himself.
That's awesome. I think for everyone, there are ways that you can create that in your own life. So maybe you don't necessarily want to go that route, but there are ways. And we crave connection as people, right? We crave attention, even if we don't necessarily want to acknowledge it, or maybe want only specific kinds of attention. But there are ways to bring that to you. And dressing yourselves up, good way to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this is a perfect segue to jumping into the first question.
Okay.
So Laura, question number one. And first, I actually want to acknowledge the people that are here live. So we appreciate you being here in this space. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to put them in the chat box, and we will see them. So thank you. So question number one is, how do you define creativity?
You know, in like the simplest possible way, it is the act of creating. Like, I think we have that instinctively as kids in learning how to play. And there's a lot of pressure given to like requiring creativity to follow this form or a formula. But you create a mood when you put in certain music. You create a dish. You create life when you plant a seed. You know, on the most basic level, that's creating. And that's creativity. And it's just a profound life force, you know? And it, really embracing it is another thing. And that's like saying, okay, what does my inner self want to create? What kind of life? What kind of surrounding? What kind of world do I want?
I like that distinction that you just made, which was stating that it is a profound life force that we all have. But then there's the embracing part of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're so right in that, that they often, in my world of what I do, so in being an art teacher for 30 years and in having my company, I Am Creative, which is a platform which I reach people in so many ways through, you know, coaching, experiential kits, all this kind of stuff and teaching. But that's where the block comes in, especially as adults.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is the embracing it, because they say all these things because we have all these old stories from when we were kids.
Yeah.
Or when somebody said that thing that
yeah.
we're holding on to, which maybe they don't even remember that they said.
Yeah. It kind of doesn't matter. But that was some of the things that affected us. You know, embracing creativity, I think, is one of the most life-giving things you can do, period. I mean, I know that when I've been in periods of my life, and I have, when I thought I was being selfish because I was trying to do stuff that was just for me. You know, creativity that was just based on what I wanted. You know, especially with costuming, what you're doing is making a story that isn't your story. And there's a lot of compromise involved in it. Just stuff I love about it. But after a while, I realized I wasn't telling my own stories at all. And I am not good when I'm not doing my own stuff. I am a miserable human being. I am critical and bitchy and bitter. I'm just not a great person to be around. So I think it's actually more selfish to not embrace who you are and what you want, because it makes you miserable to be around.
Thank you very much. Like, that is, you've just said everything. I mean, you have just said everything. You've summed it up, mic drop. Like, that is, yes. Because when you don't own what actually makes you happy, and for those people that aren't sure what makes them happy, because we've spent so much time.
Oh, man.
Doing for others or building up these walls or whatever, then take yourself, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about it, Laura, but I'd be like, take yourself to a space, even if it's like drinking something that you like to drink that'll nourish your body, or going for a walk, or breathing in 3 times and breathing out, like something to get you in this centered space, because you know what it is that you enjoy. Like, it's in there.
It's in there. It's acknowledging it. It's acknowledging it and getting. And sometimes you need reminders, right? I think everybody has been in kind of weird creative block issues with COVID, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd just gone through a big move, and I was starting up on a new gig, and I'm like, everything's moving very slowly. And I had to actually have things like coming onto your podcast and having somebody else ask me, you know, some really basic stuff about my business as teaching. You know, what is your mission and what is your vision? And I had to start writing it down to remind myself that I have that. I know that. I know these things that I mean and that matter to me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's still there. It's just right now, it was a little bit compressed.
There's one great word, compressed. Sorry.
Yeah. But I think it happens for a lot of people that I don't know. When I first started doing the artwork that led to Opulent Mobility, I had no idea that was where it was going to go. I just let myself ask something that I was really nervous about. So my friend who had a wheelchair and said, "What? How would you feel if I did this and we dressed a wheelchair for you for an art show? And I'd make you a costume. How would you feel about that?" And, you know, I was concerned that he would think that I was, I don't know, objectifying him or doing something really odd. And he totally jumped with it, you know? This was exciting. He'd never thought of something like that before. You know, and I patted it too thickly and nearly knocked him out on the floor. And thankfully, he was very gracious about that. But because I didn't understand about people being quadriplegic about where the center of balance was. And he was having some other medical issues I didn't know about and he didn't share. Okay. But I didn't know any of this was going to happen. I just knew I needed to get started because it was something that had been bugging me. And it was willing to be open to it, right?
Exactly. It's willing to be open to it, but what you said I think is really important too is when you were starting this process or when you kind of fell into it, you weren't really thinking about it. Like you didn't know it was going to end up to be this bigger thing.
No.
It's kind of like that progression of those baby steps. So sometimes I find that it works in where you have this big grandiose idea and then you have to step back and take the baby steps to it. But yeah. Then other times, which I find, which can be the best is when you had no freaking clue that this was going to be born. It just felt natural in the way. It was just kind of like a side conversation, like, oh, how about maybe we dress up your wheelchair and make it this? How would you feel about that? And then it snowballs into this whole other thing.
Yeah, pretty cool, right? I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have assumed it, but I think with almost any really serious creative project, when you let yourself go into it, they have their own needs. They have lives of their own and they have requirements. and you had best be listening.
There's another good word is listening.
Yeah.
It's kind of like so many times, and I don't know about you, like I'll be in the process of something and I'm not really listening, but it keeps showing up and showing up. And
yeah.
Finally, it's like kind of getting hit over the head. I'm like, oh, okay, sorry.
Okay, got it.
Got it. It could be like literally a smack in the face or you know, or whatever of whatever's happening. I mean, I work with clay as one of my mediums that I work with. And, you know, the beauty of clay and the terror of clay at times is you just don't know what's going to happen when it goes inside that kiln.
Nope. It starts going on. I'm like, okay, no, we're doing this shape now. All right. Like, we're going to be going with that.
Somebody that I went to school with for her senior show, all of her work, mistake number one, learned, don't put all of your work into one kiln load when it's for your show.
No. Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
But all of the shelves collapsed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, all the work was gone.
God, that's heart-wrenching.
But it's one of those moments where it's like, she was a rock star. She was like, okay, I got to do it again.
Better make some more. I've got a deadline. It's
like, you get angry, you do your thing. It's like in whatever you're creating, whatever medium that might be, you screw up, it's a big blow up. You have this idea that you've been working on like for around the business table and you have this idea, you think it's going to be this great media blitz and it's like a failure. And you're like, okay, so let's.
So what do we do now?
We just lost millions of dollars in the advertising potentially, but okay. So let's move forward. It's either let it go or move forward. It's like you have a choice.
Yeah. I think that you really always have a choice. Sometimes they're not more fun choices, to be fair, but they're always choices.
Yes. Good point. They aren't always fun choices, which I find that's what stops people a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Because they're like, this isn't fun, or I'm really pissed. This really, it's not going the way I want. We have our little tantrum, and a lot of times I find that it just ends, it can end there.
It can. It really can.
Also a big starting point.
Like, look, almost every single thing that I have ever made or put together has a certain point where I am cursing myself as a designer and ready to throw in the towel and throw everything on the floor and say, ah, and stop on it, you know? Right. And usually when putting up a show that's several times, you're like, wow, you know, they're the things that you kind of expected, the problems, and they're the ones that are like, okay, that's a little from left field, and they're the ones like, whoa, never ever in my life would I have anticipated that. Like, okay, that's just magical. But at least one of the things I really like to figure out in almost everything I'm doing is, what is the eraser function? Where's the spackle? Where can I erase it, and where can I figure out another way? Because I will have to. It's just gonna, you know?
Oh, I've never heard it put that way before. What is the eraser function?
It's one of the reasons I don't do a lot of fine woodwork, because that eraser function is hard.
Right.
But if you're doing something, say, that's a really basic construction that you can spackle and paint, it's not so hard, right?
I think it's also acknowledging, like, in the classroom we had, there's this kids book, which I think applies to adults as well. It's called Beautiful Oops. And
Oh, yes.
It said, have you seen it before?
No, but I know the concept and I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, you make a mistake and what do you do? So I'd always reinforce with the kids, how do we move forward from a mistake? Well, there's an eraser. There's turn the paper over, or take the pieces apart that you're working with and re-put them back together, or really look at it and think, huh, I wasn't expecting that. Let's go keep going with it and see where it goes. So you don't necessarily have to just knock it down and walk away, that you problem solve through it. And I have to say, like, it would face resistance, of course, but with repetition and repetition, I had certain kids that I never would have expected repeating the mantra. And when this one girl was saying it, this one girl who would break out into fights in the class and, like, have all this stuff, one day she turned to the person next to her and said, beautiful oops, just try it again. I was like, oh my God, my teaching career is fulfilled.
You have done your job well. That's awesome.
Everything that I've ever, like, she turned around, who I never would have expected, and said it to somebody. It was just incredible.
Oh, that's just great. Yeah. What a neat feeling, though.
Right? And you get to have that feeling, too.
Yeah, it's actually really awesome. The light in someone's eyes when they get it is one of the most awesome experiences. And it's just the, oh. Or when they figure out that it doesn't matter that you messed up, like, look, make it a design choice. People love that when they get it. It's like, no, really, seriously. Make it like you meant it.
Like you meant it.
That's it.
So it must be interesting watching people's faces as they walk through one of these curated shows that you have with.
It is. And generally speaking, because I'll get some negative responses, but rarely in person. The ones that those are get are more the theoretical. Overwhelmingly, people in with it, it's a surprise, and then generally delight. You know, there's trying to wrap your head around it, because if you're not sure what you're expecting, that's a lot. We don't do a lot of showcasing of disability of any kind, but making it a wow. Somebody has just turned a crutch and a cane into a fairyland. That's kind of amazing. You know?
It's such an important topic.
Yeah. And to just even think about it, the migraine one actually was a pretty impressive response, people coming through that, because first off, it's interactive and people love that kind of stuff, and it had lights. People love that.
So tell me about this. Yeah. So what was
so that? It's an origami piece that was a representation of a migraine aura. So a good friend of mine has been suffering from migraines from a really long time ago and made this interactive piece that had origami pieces that are painted in sort of migraine aura colors, and that if you press the temples on this head form that she put in, it would activate them and they'd start to crinkle and move and light up.
Oh my God.
And an awful lot of people going through and saying, that is what it's like to have one.
That's what's so incredible, is such out-of-the-box ways of putting this information out for people to experience.
Yeah.
In a way that they'll get it.
Yeah. It's a really visceral experience. So one of the artists, Penny Richards, does these amazing crocheted pieces, and she did a crocheted version of one of her kids' wheelchairs. And it's rolling rainbow, and it's a delight, you know. But just watching people, like, just the ideas sparking in their heads, seeing that, you know, this wheelchair covered with amazing array of rainbow crochet, you know, buttons and bells and dangly bits. It's very clear most of the people looking at them had never thought about it that way.
Right.
But now they can.
It's this beautification of something that isn't looked at as beautiful.
Yeah. And we've also seen some things. Sometimes the pieces will be more about the power and sort of taking back power from possibly powerless situations, but frequently they are about beauty. One of the more recent ones by Corina Dunn is a really lovely video poem of shadow puppetry of her experiences with a pretty debilitating disease, but showing it as an octopus that would kind of weigh down on her, but also these birds that will help lift her spirits and let her rise.
Oh my God. And this was done as a video poem, you said?
As a video poem, yeah. A series of shadow puppet images that she had created with a poem that she did put together as a video. Some of the shows that I do are online. Some of them are in person. Usually they'll all have an online component as well, because you can make it more accessible. I can do, I've got a great audio describer, and I know some great video voiceover artists who have recorded those so that people who don't see well, for example, can experience the artwork, or don't see at all, can experience it in another way. And that's something you can do really effectively online. It's nice.
So what was that you said? Did you give
Doing the pieces both online and offline.
Yeah, yeah. One I'm of sorry. I thought that you gave, I apologize for interrupting. I thought that you gave a link to something.
I can. If you go to opulentmobility.com, on the front page, there's a slideshow of the most recent exhibit.
I'm going to put this in the bio and everything so people can access it.
Excellent. But yeah, you can go and look at it, and you can listen to a recording of a description of it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like going to a gallery and
and getting more.
I'm sorry. I keep interrupting. I have to apologize because I'm on this different computer than I usually am. And it's just different. So I apologize.
Yeah, it happens.
Mercury retrograde is messing with stuff. But I love how what you're talking about is here you might have this somewhat traditional gallery setting, but you're setting it up for people with various abilities and needs so everybody can enjoy it.
Yeah. As much as possible. The last artist talk I did online, because everything's being done online now, of course, and I was able to bring in ASL interpreters, which was great. Of course, my own computer issues, I didn't realize when you record Zoom that it records automatically in active speaker mode and not in gallery mode, so none of that showed up in any of the recordings. So I'm editing everything together, and I'll have ASL put in after. There's a whole lot of learning curve on this stuff. Speaking of things having their own requirements.
Beautiful oops.
Yeah, many beautiful oops. Well, it's also better because, you know, honestly, the gallery view of Zoom is not that exciting to look at. Most of you say, you know, you're staring at one person talking and a bunch of Slack faces. <You're> like, So it's probably for the best, but yeah, I just made a bunch of extra work for myself, is all.
Oh my God. So you are doing such incredible things, Laura. So let's move on to question
number two. Okay.
And, again, acknowledging the new people that just jumped on. We are so happy to have you here. If you have any questions or comments, please put them in the chat box and we'd love to see them. So question two is, we've kind of touched on some stuff, but to add to it, how do you incorporate creativity into your own life?
Really, what I'm doing well, it is part of my life every day, period. I mean, and that's part of it is because of my job. And I'm doing professional costume making and costume designing. Being creative is literally what I have to do. But it's also, it is the joy. It's the reason why I am and reason why I do well. So when I'm also being creative and doing my own stuff, I'm a much better human being to be around.
Yeah.
So sometimes that means that I will push myself a little too hard and I will get too tired and then I will crash, and that's not the best choice. So I'm trying to learn to take creativity in the off times too.
Right. That's, so finding that balance, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and that I think is probably going to be a struggle that is lifelong for me, but that's okay.
Yeah, I understand it. So what is it? What are some things that you'd like to do just for yourself? Like, do you like to do any kind of exercise or meditation or go out in nature or?
Yes to all of those things, actually. I do a lot of walks in nature, and that makes a big difference for me. I grow things. I love to cook. I love figuring out how to make stuff. It's like anything. When I figured out you could make your own lotion, I was thrilled. You know, your own body butters and kind of stuff like that. Like these are exciting things for me. Yeah.
So you like taking pieces of things and kind of putting.
I like taking and figuring out what I can make them be. You know, that's really why I got into any of this. You know, I was trying to figure out how to take unused piles of things that were discards or leftovers. I'm like, what else could that become? What does it want to be? You know? I also exercise and meditate, and these are things that help me be a functional human.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to really understand that more and, like, really do it instead of just say it. Like, really incorporate the mindfulness and the meditation and the walking into my life instead of saying, oh, yeah, I'll do that. I do that. But, like, actually really doing it.
Yeah, and trying to really be there while I'm doing it, which is sometimes another issue. Like, I'll be having multiple conversations in my head while I'm like, maybe just look at what you're doing and you won't trip on things. That'd be awesome.
Totally understand that. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So it's a trying to be here now is something I think is going to be a lifelong conversation I have with myself, but it is something that I'm getting better at it.
But it's being in that moment. I think it's pretty much what 99% of the people really are aware of. So much more awareness is brought to it. I mean, my husband and I were, I mean, it's been a long time joking about it and talking about it, but the whole thing with multitasking. And
he's always
yelling at me.
We really aren't good with that. We're just not good. We think we are. We think we're awesome, and we are just, everything we're doing is kind of half-assed.
He's like, you can't multitask. I'm like, do you know what the kids need? Have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? And he's like, no, but have you done everything to completion? I'm like, well, some of it.
No, I've done everything partially. Thank you. Shut up.
On my high horse of being, well, I've done this and that and this. And some of it, yeah, you know, it's gotten accomplished, but yeah, but not everything has gotten done in the best way that it could get done.
Yeah, and with some of it's like, okay, I can recognize there's some things that are going to be half-assed in my life, and I'm going to have to be okay with that. Like, I'm not going to be dusting the undersides of anything, really, ever. It's just, I have lost that as an importance of my life. I have things to make, man.
That's so funny that you say that. I was dusting a few weeks ago, and to put it within a context, my son is 21. Mm-hmm. So he came downstairs. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I said, I'm dusting. And he's like, huh, that's new.
Oh, God.
I'm like, hey.
Shut up.
I just kind of got inspired. It was really bothering me. I've done this. I just haven't made it a huge part of my life.
It's okay. I mean, sometimes the dust bothers me, and it's weirdly dumb satisfying to get rid of that. But other times I'm like, you know what? It can sit. It won't be bothering anyone. No one needs to be inspecting the bottoms of anybody's chairs. If they're doing that, they have not enough going on in their lives, is what
exactly.
I think.
Exactly. Way too much time on their hands. Oh my God.
Like, oh well, you know, I think we all have more things that we can aspire to do. I do. Take deep breaths. It'll be good.
It really, I mean, whenever I'm teaching and really any kind of workshop that I start, I really do start with the breaths. It's the three breaths in and the three breaths out.
It makes a huge difference. It's amazing. It's like, okay, let's be here now. I'll find it unclenches my jaw. It makes things more open. Sometimes I actually, singing is a big one. It's one of the things that it's huge just to sort of open things up. And I'll experiment with sounding terrible, which is really fun. Like, how do I do it so this sounds silly or dumb? And that is actually a really fun thing to do, to just sort of play around with.
I love that, because it's play.
Yeah.
And people get especially very embarrassed, and I could be that kind of person too, as I've kind of, in the last year and a half with my own kind of growth and just mindset changes, there's a lot more comfort in things like using my voice in singing and dancing. Like before, nice. I was very self-conscious, but now mm-hmm. it's kind of like, I mean, I'm not going to break into song here, but I was just...
Well, why not? Come on.
But it feels good, and I like how you're pointing out that it's a way of opening things up and being playful. I mean, there's the physicality reasons of how it does open up all these passageways and everything in your body, but it allows for the playfulness.
Yeah, and I think when I forget that, it becomes harder for me to do stuff. So reminding myself, oh, I could do that. It's sort of a little ding light bulb moment anytime that this is a way that I can open myself up to being here and also to being more creative. I don't know, finding joy.
Yeah, I think it's a very good reminder for people just to, whenever you find yourself getting too serious and getting stuck in those moments.
Oh, it's so easy to do.
Anytime it's been easy to do that, but especially now.
Oh man, everything is life or death, and sometimes literally. I don't mean to in any way put that down or not, you know, but sometimes it's like, okay, yes, but it has always been too, and just remind ourselves that some things will be okay. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And But yeah, some of it may well be very serious. I don't know. I think one of the things I've been doing much more recently is making sure that I acknowledge what I am actually feeling instead of telling myself I should be feeling something else. You know, I shouldn't be upset. I shouldn't be, you know, I shouldn't be taking it seriously. I shouldn't be like, maybe I should just say, this is how I'm feeling right now. And then I can move on from there.
I would agree that that's key. Because I don't, I'm not one to think that you should. I mean, it's suppressing it. I mean, if you don't acknowledge it, then you're just pressing it down. And
It'll bite you later. At least it does for me.
Yeah, it's going to bite you either in you being, you know, cranky, in you being disconnected from other people, or you getting physically ill.
Yeah. It's a serious thing. And honestly, in a lot of the Western world, we're really crappy about acknowledging how we really feel. And I think it would help for all of us if we did that. Oh, how do we really feel? What do we really want? Like some super basic questions that we just don't stop and take the time to pay attention to.
Well, now that we solved all the problems in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's for right here.
No, but it's true. I mean, I think it's those words like shouldn't and all of that, I think they're pretty toxic.
Yeah. And it's super hard to not have be part of our inside voices, right?
Yeah, it's been coming up a lot actually in having conversations with people recently is, you know, the acknowledgement of would you be friends with that, your inner voice, that what you hear inside your head, would you be friends with that person?
Who can be mean? Ooh.
Depressing.
You know, some of those things, like, would you tolerate that from another human being?
Right. I mean, if we have 60,000 thoughts a day or however many thoughts a day it is, but if it's like those same repeating thoughts.
Yeah, that can be really cruel and kind of brutal. It's like, okay, well, look, if somebody, say, said that to your sister or to your best friend, you would probably want to hit them. So maybe it'd be a good time to look at it and say, huh, why am I saying that to me? Because, boy, I know I struggle with that too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a normal thing, but I think, again, it's kind of that whole awareness and acknowledgement. And once you have that, then you can be on your way to improvement.
Yeah. And at least find the things that, I don't know, help make your life amazing.
Which is what we are here to talk about. And as we are moving on to that third question, I want to acknowledge the people that have just entered the space. So welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. We are so happy that you are spending the time with us. And the last question is, so it's things that we touched on, but it's kind of bringing it all together and revisiting. But so why do you think that creativity is important?
I think it's essential. I think it's like air or water. You know, this is part of what makes us alive. One of the things that you see people arguing with, say, fundamentalism, they think is so counter to the notion of creativity, is it should only be one way. Only things can only follow this particular rule. That it is crushing to ideas, it's crushing to inspiration, it's crushing to diversity and development, ruins businesses. I mean, this is what makes things alive. You know?
Yes.
It's part of the spark that makes us, look, you see it in other aspects of nature as well, but it's definitely one of the main things that makes us human. It is a profound force. People are decorating cave walls. You know, people were carving their food bowls into something beautiful.
Yeah.
It's essential, just as essential as basic shelter and food and water.
Yeah, when you said that about the caves, you know, I've done that many times with hieroglyphics and the cave symbols, mm-hmm. and all, just using, you know, the whole idea of communication. And it's true. Yeah. I mean, everything that you said, it is essential. It's your expression. It's a way of communicating. It's a way of getting ideas across, and I couldn't agree more. It's just, yes, there is never one way of doing something.
It's the other thing that I actually really, really love about it, because I think it is such an essential thing, and essential, like, overwhelmingly all over. But it's also totally individual. Every single being has its own way of being creative, and that's super important. I mean, it's also, I know that it saved my sanity in my life multiple times.
And it saved your sanity?
Yeah.
How?
Like some of my most recent stuff, the pieces with Kali and Medusa, I was very definitely called forth to do Kali. I mean, that was one of those things where it was like, took 2 years to build, and it was a time of rage and fury. I mean, I'm not going to lie. This was a really ugly time in my life. And I was dealing with some nasty medical issues, and the doctors weren't acknowledging them. A good friend was killed in a hate crime. A lot of people I knew died, and I was getting hit every day with, like, all of the hatred going on to the run-up to the Trump election. The last one, the not most recent one, but the one before. And Kali demanded to be built. It's in no way did I want to be culturally appropriative or disrespectful. But if Kali is calling you, you better.
Can you give people a little bit of a background of who Kali is?
The Kali Walker, she is based on Kali, who's the goddess of time and empowerment, the Hindu goddess, and she is also a big slayer of demons. She has got a necklace of demon skulls and a belt full of hands that are severed. And she's dark and light. She is birth and death. And she is enlightenment in the most truest of forms, right? She is, makes you see what is.
Yeah, I think you're just making such a good point, is that you need whatever it is that you have is that outlet. Lot of times it's not pretty. Like, you just...
No. It wasn't even about pretty, but for pretty much everyone that I know who really has let themselves embrace it, that creativity has gotten them through some really ugly times.
Yeah.
Because this is something you have to hold on to. It's something that's tangible. And it's something you have some say over in a world where maybe you don't have so much elsewhere.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring this up, because I just was telling somebody about this share that a fellow art teacher did a while ago in the beginning of the whole pandemic. And it was about a second grade teacher basically saying thank you to all the specialist teachers. Or actually, she was saying she was apologizing.
Oh.
And she said, I am sorry for not appreciating you. I'm sorry for thinking of your space as just a drop off for my kids so I could have a break for that 45 minutes. You're actually the most important teachers in the whole school, because as we are all in the middle of all of this, what did we all turn to? We turn to mindfulness, we turn to music, we turn to cooking, we turn to writing, we turn to film.
We turn to creativity.
Creativity. And this is what this is what is getting people through.
Yep.
And she said, I'm sorry.
Oh, wow. How powerful.
Right?
Yeah. What a potent thing to say, you know, and a potent thing to experience. Neat.
And I just think it's so important in these school systems, you know, part of the traditional school systems, to recognize that and just acknowledge that, because so much of it can be squashed in that.
Oh, yeah.
And I can say that being in the system for so long.
Yeah, I'm sure you got to experience that firsthand. I know I have. It's real rough. But look, you can also get, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and there's no reason why it has to be only the rote. I think that's the notion of fundamentalism trying to deny creativity, where creativity is the natural state, I think.
Yeah. So this is a perfect way to wrap this up. And I want to put it out to people and say, like Laura just said so eloquently, that creativity is essential. It's air, it's water, it's what makes us alive. And I want you to think about, what is it that you are implementing in your life? What is it that you are doing to do something that makes you feel good? And how are you expressing yourself? And just notice it. It doesn't have to be this mind-blowing. It doesn't have to be huge. But it's something that you need to be doing for you to be expressive, to allow you to be the best person you can be.
Oh, that is awesome.
So, Laura, can you please tell people how they can find out more about you?
Okay. Yes, you can find Opulent Mobility at opulentmobility.com. And you can find out about my teaching and my own personal art and costuming at dreamsbymachine.com.
I will put all of that in the bio. So
thanks so much. And this has been a pleasure.
You know, Laura, thank you so much. I am so happy and grateful that you have taken this time to be with me, with us.
Likewise. This is cool.
So exciting to know all that you're doing. Like, you're doing such incredible, you are putting such incredible light into this world and bringing such a light into a topic, many topics, but that are just so, so, so important.
Thank you. I feel like, I don't know, again, when it calls to you, you best do it, right?
Exactly. So I'm so happy to the people who have joined us. We really, really appreciate your time. This space is all about connecting, inspiring, and sharing stories. So please like, follow, and share so we can spread the word and get these stories out there.
Yes.
Yes. So have a good day, evening, anything. And Laura, did you want to add anything? I'm sorry if I keep cutting them off.
Nope. This is actually perfect. And thank everybody for joining us. This was lovely.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Talk soon.
Bye.